Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast. It's Monday, July 11th. President Biden's executive orders on abortion rights Friday and an intensifying conversation among wings of the Democratic Party or progressives and Democratic Party mainstream leaders, however you want to characterize these groups, as to whether Biden is going far enough and sounding passionate enough about abortion rights and other issues. A New York Times poll out today finds Biden's overall approval rating is even lower than before, one of the lowest among presidents in decades, and 60% of Democrats want to consider other nominees for 2024. And that's not just progressives over whether Biden is progressive enough, but that's part of the issue, to be sure. To talk about all of this, January 6th developments, abortion rights, executive orders, and more, is Ellie Mistal, the nation's justice correspondent covering the courts, the criminal justice system, and politics, and the force behind the magazine's monthly column, Objection. He is also the author of the best-selling book, Allow Me to Retort, A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution, which even Amazon has put on its best books of 2022 list. And to leave no doubt about where he stands on some of these issues, as Ellie joins us, he tweeted yesterday, "The good thing about being an activist, quote, out of step with the mainstream of the Democratic Party, unquote, is that we're kind of used to the mainstream of the Democratic Party telling us to go jump in a lake." Ellie, I hope you enjoyed your weekend, maybe in an actual lake, and welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Brian. I'm doing as well as I can, given the desperate situation we find ourselves in with the revocation of fundamental rights for half the population.
So can we start with the executive orders on abortion rights themselves and then go into what more you think Biden could be ordering or saying? A CNN list of the actions taken includes to expand access to emergency contraception and long-acting reversible contraception like IUDs, a statement from the Attorney General saying states cannot ban mifepristone, the medication used to end early pregnancy that has FDA approval. Plus, the department will ramp up outreach and public education efforts on abortion to ensure that Americans have access to reliable and accurate information about their rights and access to care. And it says the executive order also focuses on protecting patient privacy. The president is asking the chair of the Federal Trade Commission to consider taking steps to protect consumer privacy when seeking information about reproductive health care services. So that from CNN. Ellie, how much is that something rather than nothing?
Yeah, Brian, I'm going to try something that's very dangerous in American media. I'm going to try some nuance, okay?
Uh-oh. We're in trouble.
Right? There are some good things in this executive order. This executive order is something. The way that I've kind of tried to explain it to people is that what the Biden administration is really telling us is that they're trying to protect the rights to travel, right? Like, that's how the Biden administration wants people handle this full-sail attack on women's rights. They want women who are living in fundamentalist Christian states to be able to get out freely to the rest of America, access their rights as needed, then go back home without risk of prosecution. That's the, like, if you take it from 30,000 feet, that's what Biden's trying to do. And if you're trying to do that, some of these ideas are really important. CNN didn't mention the part where Biden, where I thought was actually the newest part and the most important part of the executive order, where Biden said he is going to offer protection to abortion clinics in border states, which are, you know, if you read the press, they are in danger, right, from crazy people, and they need protection. So he's going to protect those people. He says that he is going to protect the right to travel. The privacy stuff, incredibly important. So people can't criminalize pregnant people who flee their states to the rest of America to get services. All of that is good. All of that is appropriate. If you kind of if you accept the premise of the Supreme Court's decision that abortion is not a fundamental right and that it should be up to the states to decide whether or not women have rights. If you accept that position, then the way to get around that declaration is to protect travel rights, and that's what Biden is trying to do.
Okay. And on that preposition or proposition that he accepts, does he have any choice but to accept it? Because he's not the Supreme Court. There is a separation of powers, and the Supreme Court, no matter what anybody thinks of them, ruled that the Constitution gives the states the right to regulate this.
Well, I mean, this is where we get into the other side, Brian. Look, the best way of putting this is that there are things Biden can do, but these are the things Biden has chosen to do. Okay, what he is willing to do is what's in the executive order. That's not the full scope of his powers. He's not willing to use the full scope of his powers. We have reports that Biden considered declaring a public health emergency over this issue and sending doctors to the Christian fundamentalist states that are taking away rights. Biden declined to do that. We have reports that Biden considered opening up federal lands to be leased by willing doctors to provide services. Biden decided not to do that. Now, there are reasons why one might decide not to do that. And you know, if you like Biden's approach, then you probably like this safe response to the crisis that we're facing. But the idea that this is the full scope of his potential powers is just wrong. Brian, you're saying like, oh, this, and many people, you know, are here. The Supreme Court is the law of the land, and once they say something, there's nothing anybody can do. I understand why people say that. That's not necessarily true. All right? The Supreme Court gave itself the power to invalidate laws and to be the final say on the Constitution in 1803. That's not in the Constitution that the Supreme Court gets to tell us what's constitutional or not. Supreme Court gave itself the power. Congress could take that power back, straight up, right? Like, it's called jurisdiction stripping. And Congress could say that actually the Supreme Court does not have the right to rule on whether this or that law or ordinance is constitutional.
Just to say, that would be a huge change in at least the separation of powers, the way the separation of powers is practiced in this country. And we know that over time, the Supreme Court has done a lot to grant rights, especially to marginalized people, that the political system would not grant.
I mean, for about 25 years there, yeah. Like, over the 250 years of American polity, about 25 years there, the Supreme Court was in the business of granting rights. The other 225 years or so, the Supreme Court has actually usually been a conservative force in our politics to take away rights. But, Brian, you're exactly right. Everything that look, there is no magic bullet, all right? There is no wave of the wand. When the Supreme Court takes away a fundamental right of the people, there is no easy solution to that. Everything I'm saying, everything that I could think of is radical, is aggressive, is unprecedented. It's an unprecedented, radical, aggressive response to an unprecedented, radical, aggressive decision. Let's never forget that the Supreme Court took the most extreme position possible in its decision in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health. There were lots of more narrow ways that it could have ruled on that case. In fact, it was set to rule in a more narrow way until Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. And the conservative forces decided to up their game and go from instead of simply upholding a 15-week abortion ban, which would have been violative of Roe, to overturn Roe and Planned Parenthood v. Casey altogether. That was a radical, extreme decision. The Dobbs decision, it marks the first time in American history where a right granted to the people have been taken away from the people. So I 100% agree, Brian, that everything that one might do to ameliorate the situation is radical, aggressive. From where I sit, I think that those radical, strong, aggressive moves are warranted given the desperation of what is happening. I don't think people have a full appreciation, not just of how bad it is, but how bad it's gonna get. So you were talking about things that people might have missed over the weekend. Late Friday, the state of Texas said that it was going to sue, it hasn't done this yet, but it threatened to sue a law firm in a kind of let's find the biggest prisoner in the yard and punch them, to sue a law firm in their state, one of the, I think the second biggest law firm in the state, Sidley Austin, because Sidley is agreeing to pay travel costs for employees who need to flee Texas back to America to receive reproductive services. Texas is gonna sue them over how they, over an employee benefit.
In the private sector.
In the private sector. It's gonna get so much worse before it gets better. And so all of my solutions tend towards radical temporary fixes until we can address the real problem. And the real problem is the Supreme Court and the fact that it's been packed by theocratic conservatives, and we need to expand the court to dilute their power.
Ellie Mistal, justice correspondent for The Nation with us, talking about Biden's response to the abortion ruling by the Supreme Court. So here's part of the president's appearance for that executive order signing to protect some abortion rights on Friday that has gotten under people's skin. This is what I've seen remarked on and tweeted about a lot by people who are really frustrated. It's when the president said this.
We need two additional pro-choice senators and a pro-choice House to codify Roe as federal law. Your vote can make that a reality. I know it's frustrating, and it made a lot of people very angry, but the truth is this, and it's not just me saying it, it's what the court said. When you read the decision, the court has made clear it will not protect the rights of women.
Did you react badly to that, Ellie? Imploring people to go out and vote because that's what's going to change this?
Why are you trying to get me in trouble, Brian? Look, of course people need to go out and vote, all right? People, voting is our first line of defense. It's our first expression of power. It's how we change things. Of course people need to go out and vote. And I would argue in their local elections that there are Democrats around the country in their districts that are worth voting for in these midterms. So absolutely people need to go out and vote. The idea that we are just two good guys away from changing all of this is just, I don't know how else to put this, Brian, it's folly, all right? That is wish casting. A, Biden is telling us that we're two senators away from cracking the filibuster, at least in terms of doing a national codification of abortion rights. That's wishful thinking.
Which Biden supports, by the way, right? But doesn't have the power to do, ending the filibuster for abortion rights and for voting rights.
Right. Biden supports both of those things. There are obviously two senators that we know of that don't support those things. Biden says, give him a 52 vote majority and we're good. That's wishful thinking that the two senators that we know of are the only two. But let's go. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's say that we get 52 senators. Where I say this is wish casting is I do not understand what makes people think that the same Supreme Court, which just thumbed its nose at 50 years of its own precedent, will uphold a national abortion law. I don't know why people think that. I don't know where they're getting their information, right? Like this court, if you take any clear-eyed view about what this court is willing to do, this extremist court. I've written articles in The Nation kind of detailing how the court over the past 30 years, people forget Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which upheld Roe v. Wade, was a 5-4 decision, and all five justices who upheld Roe v. Wade were appointed by Republican presidents.
Right. Now, I'll continue to play devil's advocate here and say, the court didn't say that Congress can't legislate a right to abortion. It just said a right to abortion is not implied in the Constitution. Those are different, right?
Well, yes, Brian, you're right about what the court said in this particular opinion. The question is there any reason to believe them? And I posit that if you actually read all of their other decisions, there is no reason to believe them. Yes, on 2 weeks ago, or not 2.5 weeks ago, Friday, they overturned Dobbs. They overturned Roe v. Wade, saying that it's that there's no constitutional right to abortion. So then people say, oh, we're going to pass legislation. Well, the last day of its term, the same Supreme Court, the same six conservative justices, basically said that the EPA didn't have rights to regulate the environment under the Clean Air Act. A law passed by Congress that created the EPA, is now not enough of a law to let the EPA do what it was created to do. These conservatives are off, they're out to lunch. They're not here on Earth One. And so arguing, well, this time surely they will fall. No, there's no evidence anymore that these conservatives care about the law. So when you said you're going to pass a law in sometime in 2023 to codify Roe v. Wade, I will tell you what happens then. What happens then is that the Fifth Circuit issues a temporary injunction preventing that law from going into effect. The Supreme Court then takes up that temporary injunction on a shadow docket and upholds the temporary injunction pending a merits decision that doesn't even get argued until 2024. And then in 2024, when we are in an election year, a presidential election year, the Supreme Court brings the hammer down 6-3. Here, Brian, I'll prove it to you this way. Think about the ACA. Think about the Affordable Care Act. Now, media people tend to laud John Roberts for saving the ACA. But how did he save it? He converted the ACA, which was a national health care bill that will be very similar to any kind of future codification of Roe v. Wade. He converted it into a tax. Why? Because he was trying to be nice? No. He converted it into a tax because he didn't want to agree that the government had the power under the federal commerce, under the Interstate Commerce Clause, to give out essentially health care on a national level. He thought that it had to do statewide. So the only way he felt that he could uphold it was as a tax. Right. A future codification of Roe v. Wade is going to fall just like the ACA case did, only there will be no tax for Roberts to dodge. And even if Roberts was willing to dodge it, he would be in the minority because they have more conservative justices now than they did then.
I hear you. Now, one specific thing that I've been talking about, and I saw you've been tweeting about, and you brought it up here too by calling these states that are banning abortion theocracies, is about abortion bans as acts of theocracy. So this weekend, Ellie, I looked up some polling data, maybe you already know all this, on different religions' members' views on legal abortion in the United States. And what we come up with is that among the major population group religions, only white evangelical Protestants support bans on abortion. If you look at, that number is 63% generally think abortion should be illegal in what the Pew survey, I'm going by the Pew Research Center numbers here, evangelical Protestant, which means white evangelical Protestant, 63% for the bans, 33% against the bans. They separate this out between that evangelical Protestant group and what they call historically black Protestant, 52% to 42% for abortion rights. And then you go down some of the other groups. Jews, 83% for abortion rights. Mainline Protestant, as Pew calls them, 60% for abortion rights, just 35% against. Muslim, 55% for abortion rights, just 37% against. Orthodox Christian, Eastern Orthodox, 53% for abortion rights. And of course, unaffiliated, 73% for abortion rights. So when you come down to it, one way to look at what's going on here is a white evangelical theocracy imposing its religion on just about everyone else. Is that how you see it?
Absolutely. The idea, and look, I'm Catholic, raised Catholic, somewhat lapsed now. Sorry, Father.
I should say, because I left them out. Sorry, I was leaving them for last just because they're the most split group. The Catholics, 48% for abortion rights, 47% against. So we'll call it a toss-up among Catholics. But still, that means, you know, half the Catholics think abortion should be legal, so it's not like this overwhelming Catholic population position.
That sounds like my people. Look, the idea that life begins at conception is a fundamentalist Christian view, all right? Many people in many other religions across the globe and in this country do not share the fundamentalist belief that life starts at conception. That is why, and then of the people who believe this fundamentalist Christian thing that life starts at conception, many of those people don't believe that they should be allowed to impose their religious beliefs on others. One of the things that's been really interesting, and by interesting I mean like horribly, like soul-shattering, disheartening to me over the past 70 days since the Dobbs opinion leaked, is that, you know, as I talk to people, It's shocking to me how few people even understood what was in Roe and what Roe stood for in the first place, right? Like the way that we solve this situation where some people believe one thing and other people believe a different thing is to take it out of the religious sphere and look at it from a secular perspective. From a secular perspective, the only time where it even makes secular sense for the state to have an opinion on what's going on between a woman and her body and her doctor and her God. The only time it makes sense for the state to even have an opinion on that is at fetal viability. And that's what Roe said, that before fetal viability, when the fetus or embryo or whatever you believe it is, cannot survive without the labor of the pregnant person, then the state legitimately has no right to tell that person what to do. After fetal viability, all right, we can make some calls. We can say like, all right, the state has a legitimate interest in this or that or whatever. And that was Roe. That was Roe. So there are people who really think that the viability standard is the right one, yet supported overturning Roe because they didn't understand what was in Roe. And I think that when you look at what is supposed to be a multi-ethnic, multi-religious, secularized country, the standard in Roe was the only legal standard that made sense. And everything that's not the standard in Roe is Christian fundamentalist theocracy.
Ellie Mistal, the nation's justice correspondent, author of the book, Allow Me to Retort, A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution. And I gather, I didn't know this when the segment started, so I'll say it now. Some of you listeners may remember, I knew this, some of you may remember that Ellie was the legal editor for Radiolab's series about the Supreme Court a few years ago called More Perfect. And now Ellie's a consultant for Radiolab. Is that because they're doing More Perfect Season 2?
I am not at liberty to say.
Oh, okay.
But no, like I'm consulting for their weekly show now. I imagine most of your listeners listen to Radiolab, but if you're going to let me plug for a second, it's the best podcast. It's just the best podcast. People should listen.
A superlative from Ellie Mistal. For many of you, I know, a superlative in his own right. Ellie, thanks as always.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.